We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 364 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Rafa Aldamui from SK Un Podcast. How's it going, Rafa?
Everything's going great, Dan. Happy to be here once again. I want to talk about a lot of things that I know that we're going to get into, so I'm really happy to be here. And then I'm just trying to look at the glass half full, Dan. I'll be honest. That's what I'm trying to do. Stay positive.
Well, I did promise on the show that came out less than 36 hours ago when I did a little bit on the Ansu Fati stuff, just talking about the catastrophizing of that, as well as we went over Lucy Bronze, the signing for Barça Femení, the right back, huge signing, as well as Ikesi Ferreira, which is another huge signing. She was the joint leading scorer for the Femenino division in Spain. So two big signings coming in for the Barça Femení just in the past week. I was excited about those. Yeah, and so that's what we kind of went over, plus the La Masia update that I do every 6 months or so. So a ton of names. I finally had to say the name, the 14-year-old Lamine Yamal. He'll be 15 very shortly, but I usually don't go that low. But the only reason I brought the name up, finally, you know, because every time, I think the last about 2 years, people in the comments were always, what about Lamine Yamal? He's lighting it up at the Infantil A or whatever it is. But he played with the Cadet A this season, which is the U16s. And once you get to the U16s, you're in striking distance. You know, again, Ansu was 16, Pedri was 16, Gabi was 16. So these kids are rewriting what is 16, right? So even now a 15-year-old, you know, in a month's time is a guy that has got to be a little bit on the radar. So the La Masia one, I usually in the past used to pick five who were breaking in, but that was a time before we saw all these players break in, right? That was a time when it was just Sergio Roberto and we're just pleading for Carlos Alenia to get in the first team. Ricky Puig was going to be the future someday. And it feels like a lifetime ago, but Rafa, we're actually not talking about any of the players who are in the team or in La Masia. That was the show from 36 hours ago, but it's been a month since you've been on. And basically a month ago, I checked back, you and I spoke about the Frankie de Jong rumors. They were gaining a lot of steam at the time. Now, 1 month later, some economic levers have been approved. And here we sit with the same rumors from a month ago. And as we know with these types of things, when there's smoke, there's fire. And, you know, if I'm going to give you a choice, do you want to start with the De Jong stuff or do you want to start with the man who, in theory, Barca wants to replace him? I feel like we got to start with De Jong.
Let's start with Frankie because he's still our player. So I think that would be the best way. Let's start with what we currently have, which is Frankie De Jong.
Well, yeah, I mean, Frankie de Jong, there was a piece, a lot of this stuff is going to be taken from a piece from Ryan O'Hanlon for ESPN, who compiled the numbers on Frankie de Jong, because we're at a point, Rafa, and before I go over the numbers, I'm going to throw it to you. You haven't said much here on the show. It's been a lot of me so far. So as far as de Jong goes, Manchester United and Barcelona have been in direct contact today for Frankie de Jong. Still no agreement on the fee, and Barcelona have told Man United they won't sell the Dutch midfielder for less than 86 million euros. Barcelona, unsurprisingly, also reportedly want that as a full fee guaranteed upfront. So no Liverpool installments. Like, again, Barcelona is going to be paying for Liverpool and Coutinho until 2099. But yeah, so they want it full guaranteed with the fee. And also, again, because the Liga rules state that, again, they can't even use the player that they would want to bring in if they don't have that money coming in immediately as income. to offset the salary limit in the Liga. So that's the boring part. But, you know, the neutrals, Rafa keeps saying that Frankie de Jong, he's broken at Barcelona because he's a broke, not that he's broken, but Barcelona are a broken club, therefore he's broken. And then they're saying, well, the only club that could want him is Manchester United, which is another quote unquote broken club. Now he's a player that at 25 can only go between these big, big broken clubs, if you will, being, I guess Juve would be another one, the third in that holy trinity of clubs that were mismanaging the ground for the last 10 years. Any merit to that?
No, I mean, the thing is, I honestly don't, I don't remember what I did yesterday, let alone a month ago. I don't know exactly what I said about Frankie, but like right now, given these circumstances, how, in my opinion, Manchester United are lowballing Barcelona for Frankie de Jong. The thing is, if we do have to sell him because of economic reasons, that now, one of the things that I remember a month ago, there weren't any levers activated or close to being activated. It was like, oh, we got to sell Frankie because of economic reasons. And that, like, yeah, there's been talks about those levers, but like the assembly hadn't happened yet. Nothing had been approved yet, yada, yada. Now the assembly happened. Everything was approved. Now Laporta and company have to put their hands and get their hands dirty and actually get that money. But I don't want to undersell Frankie de Jong. To me, it's preposterous, word of the day, that City are asking 80 million for Bernardo Silva, or close to that range, because, and then like United are offering 60 for Frankie. And that's why I don't agree with that narrative that, oh, Frankie is a broken toy slash player at Barcelona, so he can only go to a broken club like United. No, whether that could be half truth in the sense that, yeah, it's true that Frankie hasn't fulfilled his potential at Barcelona. We've talked about Frankie and that numerous times. You've talked this numerous times. Everybody has talked about this. What is Frankie de Jong's perfect role at Barcelona? Does it exist? Does he need to be like whatever, like interior, double pivot, lone pivot, whatever that may be? He hasn't played a bunch of games as a lone pivot. Whatever. I'm not going to get into that specifically, but it would piss me off if we sell him for like 60 or 65. And because I know that when he goes to, whether it's United or a Manchester City, whatever that may be, he's going to flourish because I think he has the talent. He's still only freaking 25 years old. To me, he's the mold of a younger Kevin De Bruyne. In the sense, physically, the way his technical ability, the way he can progress with the ball, drive with the ball. So I know that if we sell him for a low fee, not taking into account his age, his great talent, his potential, then he's going to flourish at another club. And the narrative of Barcelona or anti-Barcelona people are going to be like, oh, look at Barcelona. Look what they had. They sold him for X amount of money, which is very cheap. And now look at him. He's flourishing again. That's the Ajax, the Frankie de Jong from Ajax. So if we're going to sell him, I don't want to undersell him. If we can only get 60, like to put a number, then I'm sure we can still get 60 or 65 next season. So we might as well keep him if nobody's going to offer, in my opinion, what he's truly worth, yeah, which is close to 100. Like, let's be real. Freaking Tchouaméni. I know he could be really good and whatnot, but you can't convince me that Tchouaméni playing with Monaco is worth more than Frankie de Jong right now, given his cachet with the Netherlands national team, with Barcelona, even though he hasn't fulfilled his ceiling. But to me, that you said, like Tchouaméni being sold for more than Frankie de Jong, it's, to me, that's crazy. So if we're not going to get what we should be getting for him, if United aren't willing to go to, up to that sum, then in my opinion, I know his salary apparently goes up a ton. Yeah, that's a whole different story because of the salary limit. But if not, I honestly, it would piss me off if we sold him for like 60 or 60 with 70 with add-ons and whatnot.
Well, I've been pretty hard on that line that I have believed for a while now that Frankie de Jong leaving Barcelona would just come down to that salary limit and his wages and his weekly wages and what they are going to be in the future, because the club is, in theory, because of deferred payments, stuck with Piqué, Alba and Busquets as those high earners. And then Dembélé, you know, part of why these contract negotiations are stuck where they are is because the salary he is currently at, the wages he is currently at per week are unacceptable. And Barcelona would severely be lowering a player's wages who is entering, in theory, his age prime. And so it's understandable why Dembélé is stuck in this deadlock, because they paid him a lot more than he was worth as he was becoming a budgeting player. And now he's not that. So for Frankie de Jong being 25, again, I think what he makes is fair, but what he makes in Barcelona's team moving forward, because again, we've already admitted that for all you can say about Frankie de Jong, there is a hierarchy that is already being established, as in a healthy Pedri is going to start over Frankie de Jong. Now, I know there's three spots in midfield, or you could argue is de Jong supposed to be the pivot or the right interior, right? And then Pedri's the other starter. Sure. But if there's an instance where on the mark of rotation, like we saw moments, there was, I'm trying to remember the exact game, but there was a game I remember doing the five things for the match reviews I did every week, there where I said that Pedri, Gabi, and Busquets, they had a performance together in the heat of them doing the 15 unbeaten streak, where that midfield trio looked like the best that we had seen this season at Barcelona, like those three together. And because of Gabi's age, and when I say age, I mean inconsistency at this point, but because of his inconsistencies and Pedri also getting hurt right away, that three wasn't able to replicate that when Xavi put it back out, I think the following week, because it was a weekend game, and then the midweek for Europa League was De Jong again. And that was the rotation, because again, having midfielders to rotate is a great spot. And so when you look at what Kessié is going to make this season, when you look at what De Jong is going to make this season, it makes a lot of sense to move forward in theory just with Kessié. If you believe that Pedri and Busquets and Gabi, plus maybe Nico or Kayata, whoever else is filling in, or B players, if you will, who are largely, as I said on Monday's show, going to be U19 players. But let's get into the numbers, though, because again, Rafa, I'm almost having to, I said all that being the finance part of it, but I'm almost having to unhinge my brain, because if those economic levers were not, I say it like it's some kind of big, like, zoom, you know what I mean? Like when you start a roller coaster.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
If that literal lever was not pulled, was pulled, and Frankie de Jong is still in discussion to lead the club, then now I have to take that sporting part seriously. And again, Ryan O'Hanlon from ESPN did a lot of the hard work for me putting all this together. As I had said last week with LaVon, who, congrats to him, played at the Camp Nou, by the way. We'll have, next time he's on, we'll be talking about that. So anyway, so per RB Ref, De Jong, he has some worrying stats in terms of his number, where in 11 games in his last season with Ajax, he registered 43 tackles and 43 tackles plus interceptions in 11 games. Then with Barcelona, he had 66 tackles and interceptions in 32 games, which is, yeah, not so good last season with that. But it's the percentiles that we're talking about. He ranks 81st in the 81st percentile among all midfielders for progressive passing and 94th percentile for progressive carries, which actually the progressive carries to me is a bit low. You'd think that he would be in the 98th or 99th percentile, because progressive carries is De Jong. When De Jong was, what is it, 7th in the Ballon d'Or voting for Ajax, in that year, his progressive carries were 99th percentile at the time. And, you know, that's his claim to fame. But it's the defensive categories that O'Hanlon kind of brings up that are worrisome. For pressures per game, Barcelona, which even after Xavi came, which is November to June or November to May, were a pressing team, if you will. He was still in the third percentile, not 33rd, third percentile in pressures per game. He was in the 8th percentile for tackles, and he was in the 10th percentile for interceptions. And just for context for that kind of stuff, where Verratti is 98th percentile in both progressive passes and carries, 90th percentile for pressures, 85th for tackles. Kante is 90th percentile in passes, 94th percentile in carries, 61st in pressures, 73rd percentile for tackles, 77th for interceptions. Thiago Alcantara, 98th for carries, 59th for pressures, 90th for tackles, 88th for interceptions. So even Thiago Alcantara, who, you know, is not the best at pressuring, right? He fits in that Liverpool midfield, but he is the one who gets coverage from other midfielders who are doing the pressing for him. He's still in the 59th percentile. So for De Jong to be in the third percentile, it's just, it's unbelievable. And then his off-ball work being the key, right? His movement, that's why he's here, right? Created more non-penalty expected goals per shot than any other player in the top five leagues last season and number two in that category this year. So it's a lot of confusing numbers, but I'm a bit worried about that argument when you see those numbers, and numbers on everything, it's the eye test too. You know, if Xavi doesn't believe that he's the pivot in the long term, if he doesn't believe that, and again, I'm agreeing with you that that number needs to be 85 or you walk away, right? If Man United is not willing to go, I mean, I can see 75 plus add-ons because that's what they bought him for. So if you can get exactly what you bought De Jong for and get his wages, if you will, off the books, then you do that deal because that's the thing that, again, if Xavi, who will be around for a little while, he'll be around until De Jong is 28 years old, 27, or maybe longer, 28, 29, who knows? And so if De Jong is not your answer at the pivot because of those numbers, if Xavi is putting those numbers and his eye test equals those pressures and those tackles, those interceptions, and De Jong isn't your pivot, then maybe it is time already to say, we have to just focus in the future on replacing Busquets, which is not this year because we can't afford getting rid of him. Busquets has to play as a starter. He's the highest earner on our team. We have De Jong. I mean, Busquets is our guy. And then if we can get a Bernardo Silva, who we'll do in a second, if you can get Pedri and Bernardo Silva in that midfield with Busquets, then, I mean, that's Xavi's vision, right? More so than a player who unfortunately might not fit. So as worrying as you are, as I would be about him as, I think, as a third center back, because I'd rather at this point, look at his numbers, have him be the third center back, and that puts Eric Garcia on the bench. But yeah, I mean, if you're just talking about De Jong in a vacuum, you have to assume that, yeah, of course he's going to do better somewhere else because he may not be the fit that Xavi wants, because Barcelona for a long time brought in players, Coutinho, Griezmann. I mean, even the likes of Arturo Vidal, I get it at the time. I get it. It made sense, but also in the same regard, like if Xavi wants to play a dogmatic way, he's going to need those players that perfectly fit that dogma.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And I completely understand your entire point. And that's been the entire quote unquote problem with Frenkie, because he, before Xavi and then after Xavi, it is true that Xavi got in mid season. So like, it's not like Frenkie has had a full preseason complete year from the get go to understand the concepts that sometimes we seem to forget that even Gavi has been on the receiving end of critics because he quote unquote doesn't know yet how to play in that interior role. And I think Busquets, there were some comments about Busquets too, about Gavi. So if Gavi, who has been here longer than Frenkie, like in the La Masia and whatnot, is still like kind of struggling a little bit with the dogmatic way that Xavi wants his interiors to play, then I understand that if the right amount comes, then I would accept letting Frenkie go. because of what you said. Like, even and Frankie with the national team has said, oh, I feel more comfortable like coming down, receiving the ball from the center backs and whatnot, like being the Frankie of Ajax. Obviously, in Barcelona, Xavi wants him like, dude, like stay up top, like between lines, like don't come down. That's Busquets. You don't worry about that. But my problem is, it's just that what I was saying about the feet. If it, in my opinion, if it doesn't have an eight to start, then we might as well just keep him. I completely also understand the salary part of it, but to me, I just refuse, and maybe I'm being stubborn, I'll admit it. If we're about to activate few economic levers, the BLM one, then the TV rights, depending how many we can get for each 10% and whatnot, plus, which I think this will be the difficult part, getting rid of players. It would be so sad, in my opinion, that we got to a point where we had to sell Frankie for 65, 70, because we needed to get rid of his salary that was going to increase so bad. To me, that would be the worst case scenario in that aspect, because then we got deferred salary because we got to pay like Piqué, Busquets, Jordi Alba, who at the start of it made it seem like, oh no, the captains are taking one for the club. No, they're not. They're just like, they're getting their money regardless. Like, to me, you're taking one for the club if you renounce that money, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever that may be. But if you're just deferring money, like Messi also did that, at the end of the day, like you're quote unquote helping the team at this stage, at this moment. But down the road, you're still going to get paid, or you will get paid that amount of money. So I just wanted to throw that a little bit out there, because to me, like, it seemed like, oh my God, the mighty captains are out there, yeah, like to save Barcelona. No, they're not. They're getting their money. It's just being deferred. So
yeah, from a very cold, approach here. And I think my wife gets on me a bit as a business person myself, which is where sometimes I think, you know, my desire to placate kind of gets in my own way as an entrepreneur, if you will. And I feel like when it comes to Piqué and Busquets and Alba, this is, again, going back to the Bartomeu thing, right? Like, you understand that the price at the time felt like to win it, because they just won the treble and it was time to renew those deals. And they also, you know, they were the backbone of the team. They were legends of the club. And with Messi in the salary structure, they were due the wages they were due based on his number. And so that was the argument, that it kind of had to be done, that the club at the time, led by Bartomeu and his financial crew, Carlos Tusquets, was hampered, and they had to make those deals. But in the same regard, because they had to make those deals, they're being victimized by their own success and the success of the greatest player of all time, right? And that's going to continue to be a truth, a sad truth. So my thing for Piqué, and I know people say Puyol did it, but, you know, I think if the deals were done and the handshakes were made, like, those players are going to get theirs. Like, and it's for the club moving forward, it's for them to solve that problem, right? And you can't make this argument that, you know, obviously Busquets in his head is not saying that I'm overpaid. He's saying I'm the captain of Barcelona and I'm still very, very valuable to this team, right? Like, we're making this idea that these players have to convince themselves of what the worst of us believe. That how come Piqué can't accept that? How come Alba can't accept that he's washed, when I'm here on the show always arguing with people like, good luck getting rid of Alba? Because again, if I'm going to read off the numbers for Frankie de Jong as an argument as to how he may not necessarily fit in the way that Koulaz would want him to, which would be taking over that pivot role in the long term, then I need you also look at the same stats for Alba, and you understand why he's paid what he's paid as a left back in that market. But, you know, I think from a sporting sense, maybe it's me going a little bit in football manager mode, or it's a game actually I never played, but even FIFA, which RIP, by the way, with EA Sports, and that's a show for another time, Rafa, between you and I. But if it's De Jong out for fit, and then because of the economic levers, right? If, let's say it's the rest of the economic levers, and I'm tired of saying those terms, but let's say those are used for the short-term debt that we have talked about before, like and potentially deferred payments. And potentially, I'm kind of against the termination of those contracts. But if the termination of those contracts, you know, frees up salary even next season or even post January to June, then I guess so be it, right? If the club feels like it's necessary to bite the bullet on some of these contracts, then so be it, and use the economic funds that are coming into debt along with the short-term debt. But again, if it's almost not a swap because the NCAA doesn't want this, but if you're selling DeJong at 25 years old for 90 plus add-ons, and from Citi, you're giving them 85 to 90 million for Bernardo Silva, who will be 28 in August, but he fits better, then it feels like a like-for-like swap in that instance. And there's a way forward for me to talk myself into Bernardo Silva, because how could you not talk yourself into Bernardo Silva, right? 50 games, 13 goals, 7 assists, sure. But his versatility, playing as that a high interior for Pep Guardiola, being able to play on the wing, this do-all-everything midfielder who just, again, just a superb player. Bernardo Silva is a top-shelf, top-class player. He's one of those players that elevates your team into we're contending for Champions League in the same way that we expect Frankie DeJong to do. It's not much different, except DeJong, as I talked about, even though he's constantly in the box, constantly in a spot to create non-penalty goals, he still only had 4 goals and 5 assists in 46 matches this year, which, believe it or not, based on his locations on the field, you'd expect would be a little bit more. Bernardo Silva does have those finishing products. So, I can, again, see myself talking into it, but in reality, why would Man City at any point placate this other than the relationship between, did the Ferran Torres, 55 million, did that help, set the table for this? Or again, is it Jorge Mendes trying to use his bargaining power to take a little bit more of a foothold for in FC Barcelona? But yeah, I mean, it's been funny watching the press conference this week between Guardiola and Laporta openly joking about Bernardo Silva. That to me, that actually kind of kills it, right? That kind of kills it, because it's like, we're all, those guys are smart and they've known each other a long time. They're just saying the quiet part out loud. Like, hey, we know you guys know about this Bernardo Silva stuff. We know this is real. Like, right? Like, they wouldn't joke about it if it wasn't, completely, totally out there. So that's why I think this 85 to 90 million from Bernardo Silva is a bit, I'm not sure. Like, it should work economically, but sporting wise, I don't know. Where do you land on this?
The thing is, I understand the, would Bernardo Silva be a better fit in this interior role that is like the complexity of Barcelona's midfield, which is kind of true because it is, we've seen so many people try and fail in this role. Coutinho. But the thing is, I understand that part, but to me, that still, or at least shouldn't, be a reason for us to either undersell Frenkie or overpay for Bernardo. Yeah, Bernardo's amazing. He's really good. He had an incredible season last year. But in my opinion, 2 years ago, according to reports and whatnot, he was being thrown in the mix with almost 2 more players and plus money, if you believe reports, for Messi. So to me, it's kind of mind-boggling that now he has an 80, 90 million euro tag on him just because he would be a great fit for us. But generally speaking, it's like Frenkie should be either the same or even higher because he's 3 to 4 years younger. So to me, it's kind of, again, mind-boggling that we would sell Frenkie for that or a little bit less and then pay City that. And then I don't buy City, like, we got a saying like here in Puerto Rico, it's like they, Pep, Chiqui, Soriano, they, to me, maybe I like to, I'm like, not pessimistic, I'm like, worry every time, like every word that I look, like to me, it's, I think twice when, if something's too good to be true, that they made it seem like, oh, the good boys at City X Barcelona, they're doing us a favor. Like, whoa, wait a minute. They didn't sell El Ferran very cheaply to begin with. Like 55 for Ferran is not cheap by any means. And then if they do end up selling Bernardo, it's not like 80 million, they're doing us a favor. Like, oh, just because it's Barcelona, we'll be cool with you, Laporta and all culés. Well, just 80, just give us 80 and we'll call it a deal. Like, no. Like they're not dumb. Like Guardiola doesn't have a single hair on his head. Like in Spanish, we say that, like, no tienes ni un pelo de tonto. Like, obviously he doesn't have any hair, but like, he's not dumb. Ferran Soriano is not dumb. Chiqui Beristain is not dumb. So to me, also that narrative of like, oh, the good guys at City, they're doing us a favor. No, they're not. So let's stop it there. I just have like this a little bit I think with City and how sometimes they try and make it seem that narrative that they're helping us, but I don't think they are. A lot of times they wanted to take Messi. Like, I'll never forget that. But yeah, that's the whole point that I want to make, because I know I like went a little sideways. Even I mentioned Messi and that in summer of 2020, but that's the whole point. I completely agree with you that Bernardo Silva would probably be a way better fit in that interior role next to Pedri than Frenkie is. It's just the what worries me is this whole the price of one versus the price of another one, when we have the younger one with, in my opinion, the higher ceiling, everything. So it would just be, it would bother me to no extent if we undersold Frenkie and then see him flourish wherever that may be. That would sting for a long time to me.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate again that just because you bring in a Bernardo Silva doesn't mean it would be a completely perfect fit. But again, I said this when I first heard this a month ago, that it doesn't sit with me well that De Jong has really never got a full run of games at that pivot spot, that we really haven't truly seen what that experiment looks like. And especially if Xavi is going to play three at the back, I'd be really curious to see what he would look like as a third center back. Like, even if you need to still replace Busquets and De Jong doesn't solve that problem, De Jong might mitigate some of that problem. Like, he might actually make it a bit easier for the profile you're looking for with Busquets. Now, you know, we know going back in time that the way that Xavi wants to play is very similar to the way Cruyff played with that dream team when you had Koeman in the middle and you had Guardiola. You still needed Guardiola, even though Koeman would those progressive carries and would get forward. And then you still needed Guardiola to be the mastermind of everything, to be the pivot, to do his job and shuttle that ball side to side. So, you know, we would see, we need a little bit of history repeating itself in that way. But I, to my knowledge, I don't know if we've ever seen De Jong as a center back and Busquets as the pivot for more than like 35 minutes in the second half of a game, if I'm not mistaken, maybe one or two times. And it wasn't this season. It was definitely last season under Koeman for sure. So yeah, on the Bernardo Silva piece, as you said, yeah, I mean, I think De Jong is worth 90 plus add-ons. Is that what, I mean, what does Man United get out of the deal, right? If they're just trying to go for broke there, and then obviously Man City doesn't need the funds. They already paid for Haaland. They're just looking for 85 to 90 million euros. And it would be a lot about Bernardo Silva asking for a release to from Guardiola. And I'm not sure if I'm totally on board with that either. Again, Jorge Mendes is the agent for Bernardo Silva. So again, you're talking about, since the passing of Raiola, you're talking about probably the most powerful, yeah, the number one agent in all of football at the moment. So, all right. So I the one good thing to report, though, from the young and Silva and all that stuff is the fact that I like that Man City and Barcelona are teaming up to play in that friendly at the end of August to raise funds and awareness for ALS. Juan Carlos Unze, who has been living with ALS assistant coach for the first team, he has been a huge figure in the fight for awareness against the disease since he was diagnosed a few years ago. So just a great cause that's happening. And really, to me, at the end of August, a great tune-up for the season. It's happening at the Camp Nou. So no offense to the Gamper Trophy, which I believe it's against Roma this year, but I think this is going to overshadow that one just a little bit, right? It's a different glorified friendly. And I'm always screaming Gamper Trophy propaganda and just telling people like, hey, it's a trophy. Not that it matters, like the Copa del Rey or anything. Well,
but we're playing against the Darth Lord, Darth Sidious of football, that Gunther.
Correct. right. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a studs up tackle by Mourinho himself with cleats on somebody taking a throw in the first 2 minutes and to bring that one to a high pitch. So, all right, we have yet to speak about Lewandowski on this show, so let's do that. But there's not much to add, right? It's another week and it's another saga. And Bayern Munich, though, I have to say, they're not a team that I am comfortable being in some kind of saga with, because the saga does feel dead on arrival. Like, it's not like so many other clubs, right? Like Juventus, as we know with Arthur and Milan Pjanic, Juventus is just like Barcelona, where they're fine just having this whisper down the alley for a whole summer. Like, do you want our player? No, we'll take your player. Whose player do you want? We're linked with Demir. Cause like the Angel Di Maria thing with Barca and Juve is awesome because it's a free transfer for either team. And both teams are like, well, we want him, but we don't entirely want him. And Di Maria is like, I haven't made my mind up yet. Right. And it's just like, it feels like what my wife says I like to do is it's like low stakes argument. And it's basically like low stakes, like find your destination. But Lewandowski, this doesn't seem low stakes. This seems entirely just beyond high stakes that Lewandowski is very publicly burning bridges with Bayern Munich, but he isn't, because Bayern is saying you have a contract left. And Bayern have done this before in the past. Like, whether or not you think you're a free agent, you're not, because you have a year left on your deal. And we want to see you lead our line again. You had almost 50 goals last year. You're leading our line. So when Bayern says no, they're one of the few clubs in the world that I believe. And I know that they've been said that once Sadio Mane comes in, then that meant that Bayern were going to be more willing to accept an offer from Barcelona. But again, if Bayern is saying 50 or 60, and that's what we're going to start with, and if you can't reach that, then we don't have a negotiation, then Barcelona have to walk away, and they're going to have to figure it out without Lewandowski this year. And that's what that is. So I don't know, Rafa, do you think that, so we're not in a prediction game, but do you think this saga, because I think if it carries on longer, there's a better chance of Lewandowski coming to Barcelona. But if this saga shuts down in the next like week or two, it's over, right? Like, so do you think this is going to shut down? He's a Bayern player. Or do you think this is going to carry on to eventually him being a Barcelona player?
I think this is a matter of, and honestly, I'm looking forward to read the comments on the video to see what people think. Are Bayern bluffing or not? Do you think they're bluffing or not? Because to me, it comes down to that. Like, I don't think Oliver Kahn scares me. He scared me when he was a goalkeeper, when I was younger, and he still does scare me when I see him. So when he says in a stubborn German way that he still has a contract, that worries me, because even though reporters close to Barcelona have said that, no, now the economic levers, now we have the money, Lewandowski's coming, Spini Sahaja's coming, like, Bayern are a club that if they don't want to, they won't sell Lewandowski.
Right.
So, and they've been very vocal about him not leaving. Like, he still has a year left. They've been very, very vocal. So, to me, it's crazy, because I don't know what to believe, because like the Catalan press has been so positive. Like, oh, this could happen. It probably will. And then after the economic levers were approved, they were full on, oh, Lewandowski, now we got money. This is going to happen. But then you look at the Bayern side and the way they're reacting and whatnot, and you're like, I don't know how this side's like optimistic way of looking at everything translates, because then you look at the German side of it and you're like, it doesn't look like they're going to sell him.
But does it translate if Bayern has set the number at 50 or 55 million and Barcelona are now financially able to pay that number? As in, people behind the scenes are accepting that De Jong is gone. They understand that Bernardo Silva probably isn't on the way. And if you get rid of three or four other players off those wages, then you have 50 million to burn for Lewandowski. And then the question becomes for you though, Rafa, is Lewandowski for 50 million euros, a player with who's 34 with 1 year left on his deal, as much as he will bang in 30 goals next year. But is that, are those 30 goals for next season, when you have to, again, renegotiate a new deal and the wages he'll be on will likely potentially limit other moves. But again, we're back half of June already. So like, again, the deals that Barcelona are making, I think we've already heard so many of the names, as I've said before. I think you have to believe the smoke about Marco Alonso and Azpilicueta, basically all of Chelsea's back line that didn't go to Real Madrid and Rudiger. So, yeah.
I think because the main problem of Barcelona isn't having money for the actual transfer fee. It's registering players and dealing with the salary cap and all that. So I do think Barcelona have the economic muscle to afford, let's say, a 50 million offer for Lewandowski and a 60 to 70, 60 with maybe 10 in add-ons for Koundé. And yeah, those two would be the big signings.
Right. We
and
then the rest. Can, but should they, Rafa? That's should the question. Right?
I think,
should they?
I think they should, because just looking at it from a business standpoint, this is all down to results and whatnot. And then if you have an attractive team, that then you can sell to sponsors and whatnot. And next season, we got to be honest, like, goals sell tickets and sell things. And right now, We can't rely, as much as it pains me, Dan, you know how much I love him. You know how much I love Ansu Fati. I love that kid.
I know.
We can't plan for next season on if Ansu Fati's healthy, yada, yada, yada. Because sadly, he hasn't been, and we don't know if he's healthy at all right now. So on top of that, $11, I was against offering even 40 for Lewandowski, I would say a month ago. But how things have gone now, I think if it takes 50, then whatever, let's just get it done with. Because in my opinion, that would also benefit Ansu in a way that would take a little bit of pressure off. Because let's be honest, last season, Ansu could be ready, and the perfect scenario would be 4 weeks. We need Ansu back in 2 weeks, 2 weeks before that. And then he has that pressure that not only does he have to come back before whatever that time frame might be, he is the main source before Aubameyang, maybe a little bit less after Aubameyang came in, but he's the main goal scorer for Barcelona, or the one that just creates everything. Yeah. And he has that pressure that doesn't help him with everything else that's going on. So if you have a Lewandowski, technically, there's not that big of a rush to have Ansu come back. And like, let's say, God forbid, preseason, and he's still not ready to start the season, you could be like, let's just take it easier with Ansu, because we will have Ferran, we will have Lewandowski, and then we can just surround Lewandowski with whoever the hell we have, plus Pedri and company. And that should be enough to battle against Madrid in the league and be with them ahead of the World Cup break. And then that, again, should be enough to qualify for the round of 16 of the Champions League. And then we'll see how the team is after the World Cup, injuries, fatigue, and whatnot. Then we can reassess. But if we have Lewandowski, just with him alone, we should advance to the round of 16 of the Champions League and be in the fight for La Liga until the World Cup break. So yeah. I think that's a yes from me, because even though it pains me to give in to Bayern and their stubborn ways, at the end of the day, I think we would get the last laugh, not only with Lewandowski, but going forward, because when hopefully, eventually, Barcelona are in a better economic situation, if we ever go head-to-head with Bayern for a signing, we're probably winning that, I would say, 70 or 80% of the time, because, let's be honest, living in Barcelona, living in Munich, I think that alone, if the economic offers are around the same, I think we would get the last laugh eventually down the road.
Yeah, man. I think every player is different, but yeah, it's Jorginho Dest thing. Like I have a problem because I'm American, but I always am interested to hear what other people always say about Jorginho Dest. I just think they're not really talking about him, but I was kind of humbled a little bit because, you know, I work with some people who are related to the U.S. men's national team here. And, you know, they kind of try to put me in my place, because I was like, you know, Dest is injured a lot. You know, we don't know where he's going to be, his club future. And then they kind of shut me up and reminded me, like, you know, obviously Americans can't complain when one of their players is at Barcelona. Sure. But part two of that is that even when he's on the field, though, like, he fought his way back into Xavi's team. And if he does leave, he's likely going to Bayern Munich. So Bayern Munich still sees something in Jorginho Dest. And Dest at the time had chosen Barcelona, whether it's because he was going to get more minutes, which obviously he did. He got his chances. He's been hurt, whatever. But speaking of not really Dest, but of that right wing and of that forward line, we're going to wrap up the show with another quick thing about Dembélé. Because now we're at the phase where I feel like we entered a new chapter this week. When that fan from the car, or from when Dembélé was in his car, and that fan said, where are you going to be playing? And he said, oh, man, probably Barcelona. And so I feel like we turned a corner. And I think some of the news kind of responded, not to that, obviously, it's just something that goes viral. But apparently PSG and Chelsea have lost interest, the clubs, though Tuchel is still very open to having him come to London. So the door to Chelsea is still open. It seems like PSG, that door was shut within 48 hours of that report coming out. And I think that leaves Barcelona with some interesting options on the wings, and does make a question the Lewandowski thing, right? Where the options are you renew Dembélé, at a smaller number, as we know, or you keep your number. And if his team doesn't accept that, then I guess he's going to Chelsea on a smaller number because they're upset with the Barcelona number. I'm not sure what exactly what the numbers and figures are, but it's not, I think Chelsea are willing to do more wages per week for him. And then Di Maria on a free, as I said, is I think the backup plan for Dembele if Di Maria doesn't go to Juve. Or you promote Abde and you take a long, hard look at Trincao and Caiado. And I say all those things as options, you know, three and four, if you will, or I think that's option three, all three of those players, and see which of the three, right? You kind of like Jackson Pollock it all against the wall and say, Abde, Trincao, Caiado, we've got to get eight goals out of one of those players. You got to get 14 goals out of all three of them, or 12 goals, or 14 is a lot for those three. So let's say eight. I'm going to say eight for all three of them, or whatever it is. But I don't know, losing Dembele, you didn't get many goals out of him either. So you need chance creation. So let's actually reassess that and say, we need Abde, Trincao, and Caiado in total to create 10 goals over the course of a season. I think that's totally fair if all three are around. And I think Trincao and Caiado, only one of the two will be sticking around. And I say all that before mentioning Rafinha, because at 65 million to 75 million, you know, we're talking about Bernardo Silva, we're talking about Lewandowski, and the level between those players and, you know, no disrespect to Rafinha, but there's a huge gap there. Like, I know Rafinha has become the buzz, and again, he is much younger, sure, but like, there is a proven product. You are buying Bernardo Silva at 27, about to be 28 in August, in the prime of his career. You are, for Lewandowski, his 34, as I mentioned before, is most players 27. So in theory, you are, same thing with Karim Benzema, you are signing a player at the peak of their powers at the moment. Like, Lewandowski is not showing any sign of slowing down. Does he pressure? No. Does he tackle? Not really. But he also scores goals, and that's exactly what you're asking him to do. So yeah, like, what is Dembele waiting for? I don't know. Like, it wasn't the kid, actually, that video. It was that we are in the third week of June, and his contract is up in 9 days, June 30th. That's when Dembele's contract is up. And I don't think he has something lined up. I really don't. I think Barcelona are the safety option, but Barcelona is also, you know, very much like going to prom, Rafa, where it, you know, we are the safe option. And Dembele went out, tried to ask the popular girls, and the popular girls all said no, or all said, let me think about it. I want to see what my other options are. And Dembele waited, and Dembele waited, and Dembele waited. But obviously Dembele doesn't really like our mom and dad. You know, it's a weird house. We're just, you know, we're not cool enough, or whatever it may be. We're a little awkward, but Dembele is going to wind up saying, if I want to go to the prom next year, I'm going to have to settle for Barcelona. And that was a bad analogy, but I guess my prom experiences are coming out here. We're airing these grievances late in the summer podcast. These are these moments, Rafa. But yeah, please save me from.
No, the thing with Dembele is I don't know what the hell will happen, because, like you said, I don't think even he knows, or Sissoko knows. So at the end of the day, if you told me Dembele will end up staying at Barcelona, I could believe you. If you tell me he's going to go, I could believe you as well. I have no idea what he's going to do, because I think he has no idea what he's going to do. But I do know that I think the conundrum in this whole Dembele saga is, in my opinion, I think if it was up to Mateo Alemán would have told Sissoko and Dembele to F off a long time ago.
Yeah, probably.
But I think it's Xavi for whatever. Well, not for whatever reason.
We know the reason.
Exactly. We know the reason. Xavi believes in him. Yeah. He knows what, even with all his faults, that Dembele still has a ton of faults. We know, like, he was the top assister of La Liga without having played, I think, for half the season. And that was with him making a bunch of horrible mistakes, a bunch of horrible decisions and whatnot. So that just goes to show how his ceiling, how high it is, if he manages, whether he does or doesn't, remains to be seen, to pull, like clean up his mistakes, which, in my opinion, are a lot. But Xavi believes in him so much, so I think that's why.
I mean, I almost push back on that, though. I almost push back on his mistakes. Like, his mistakes based on his wages are still, will say, too high, or his contributions don't meet his wages. But if he signs on for the wages that Barcelona would like to have him on, if you're if you're just providing, again, that end product of assists that he's doing, if he's defending the way he defended under Xavi, and if you are getting the Xavi version of Dembele, he is absolutely worth renewing. He's absolutely worth just sucking up the pride and renewing Dembele. Like, you have to do that. And I do back up what Xavi is seeing as well. Like, I think he really did iron out so many of those mistakes. Like, I think maybe it was because they were on a 15-game unbeaten streak, but those idiots and nincompoops down in the comments that are always talking about how he doesn't have a footballing brain, he shut them up quite a bit. I mean, because doing those match reviews again, I would kind of make a note for myself. Like, do I have to? Because Dembele is so polarizing. Like, unlike players like Gavi, who, did he have a good game or did he have a bad game? I don't know. He had a 17-year-old game and it was fine. Like, he did his work. Like, it was a yeoman's job, right? So it's like, I would never go in the negative for Xavi because of his age. And then players like Alba, really always had to impress me for me to bring up Alba. That's just how outside backs tend to be. Your desk really had to impress or get turned inside out to be brought up. But before Dembele, I felt like every game he was either a positive or a negative. And so many times throughout his career, like, I would try to be a little bit of a Dembele apologist, but I understood that if you turn the ball over at midfield, you are a net negative for your team. You are putting your team in a bad spot, and Barcelona does not have the institutional speed on defense, or again, whether it's Busquets and Piqué, any combination that doesn't have Araujo, and they are in trouble in transition when Dembele loses the ball. But he didn't lose the ball at midfield, he did sometimes, but very rarely. And like, I found that with the exception of, I believe it was the Osasuna match. I always say I believe it was the Osasuna match, but whether it was the Osasuna match and it was like one or two others where he straight up didn't show up, where from minute two, I was like, Dembele is disengaged. I don't know what it is. Like, he's not showing up today. But by and large, he showed up week in and week out, game in and game out for Xavi in the second half of the season. And as I keep reiterating, I understand that we have this belief of what Dembele is and what the worst of Dembele can provide you, because that is a player who's going to turn it over at midfield, who is not going to deliver a finishing ball. But Xavi's Dembele is the one I want, and the one that I think this club desperately does need to renew.
I'll add another thing that I know it's your podcast, but I want to ask you a question because it's about Dembele as well.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think we can all agree that if it's near the right sum for Barcelona, obviously we care about Barcelona. We don't care about Dembele's personal preferences and whatnot. If it's the right amount for Barcelona, then why not? So that's what, to me, it's a little bit mind boggling from a Barcelona standpoint. I know that personally Dembele, of course, he's going to want, and his agent, the higher offer and whatnot, but he has been injured for the most part of the 5 years that he's been at Barcelona. This season, he didn't play. Obviously, that injury was with the French national team during the summer, but he came back, around October, November, something like that. Yeah. So at the end of the day, in my opinion, is I get it from his point that, he's entering, you could say, the start of his prime and whatnot. But to us, for the amount we paid, for how you've treated us and your agent, for you haven't been reliable whatsoever from a health standpoint. I haven't even gotten to the outside stuff that we've heard from him. So at the end of the day, it's like, if it's a fee that benefits Barcelona, then
I have to trust Alemany and the club at this point. Like, I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but right now he makes around, the reported number is 20 million in annual gross, 20 million, which puts him just behind Alba by 830,000 and behind Busquets as the third highest earner for Barcelona, which makes sense based on the contract he was given and all that stuff. Sure. So obviously he fell so short of that. I think the club is at the table with 8 or 9. Puts him right around where Ter Stegen is, right behind Pedri and Memphis and Piqué. So I think even 10, which is what Memphis is at, I could see the club even giving 10. And I think his group is coming to the table between 12 and 15, which, if De Jong is gone and Busquets and Alba are gone, that means that Dembele is your highest earner. And I know Ansu and Pedri's will both be going up as well. So by that point, Ansu might actually overtake Dembele in 2 years' time. But So I think that's where what you're sitting on, right? I think that the club is a number, and I agree with the club. Again, I will back them and Alamandi, even if there is no other answer. Like, again, I did a La Masia thing because I tell you that if you're going to bring any player up from the academy, it's going to be a 17-year-old winger or an 18-year-old winger or a 19-year-old winger. That's who you bring into the first team. Like, that's the ones. Like, because Abde, I mean, winger is one of those positions where if you bring a center back up who's 17, 18 years old and they get destroyed by Lewandowski, like, that can destroy a young player's career. But a winger, he's 17 or 18 or 19. You say, hey, you're fine. You're a year or two away from the first team, but we need you in this moment. But we don't need you. See what you can do. And that's why wingers and attacking midfielders, they always get their chances in FA Cups and Copa del Reyes. And like, those are the positions where, again, it doesn't derail career. So I could see Xavi putting a bit of trust in, like, is it time for Ilicic or Comas, right? He finally scored a few in the second half of last season, but he was still playing with the Juvenil A's and barely breaking into Barca B. And this year would be his first year full if in Barca B, if you will. So yeah, I'm stuck in two minds. That I know that Barcelona cannot replace everything that Dembele would give. And they're a better team with him. Full stop. Like, there is nobody to be brought in that's going to be an upgrade on Dembele. It's just, it's not possible. He doesn't exist on the market. Dembele is truly special in that way. But as I said, I agree with you that the club cannot go higher than whatever their limit is, which I think is 10. And they should not go higher than 10. That's it. The buck stops there. And if Dembele is a player they cannot accept to go lower than that, and Chelsea are willing to pay 12 or 13, then he is gone. But I don't think Chelsea is willing to do that. And I think that's why this is so interesting. That's why this final chapter is so crazy to me, because I don't think Barcelona is going to be the club to concede. I don't think Barcelona is going to do 12 to 13, because again, now they're back to negotiating where, yeah, we need you, we want you, and you played well here. But if you want another contract when you're 27, 28, if you're going to try to sign on a 3 to 4 year deal, playing with us and playing that way is maybe your best opportunity to do that. Because if Chelsea doesn't hit you with 12 or 13, PSG doesn't want you, you don't have another place to go. Because there are, like, when the merry-go-round goes around, I don't know how many other clubs have 12 or 13 in gross annual euro, like million euros on their, like, just sitting there waiting for Dembele. I don't think it exists anymore already in the third week of June before any of these contracts are officially signed. So I'll give you the last word on Dembele.
Yeah. No, at the end of the day, also, it's what you said, like, there's 9 days left, because what happens if the ball game changes? Because now technically it would count. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You're like the technical whiz with all these things. Technically, it would count.
I still count the fingers of my toes. I just want to warn people.
It would count as a renewal if it happened before the end of June. But if it happens after he's a free agent and Barcelona haven't activated the economic levers, correct, then it's still that like 4-1 or 3-1 thing, that whatever. So
exactly. So they got to get it done. Yeah,
exactly. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the next 9 days, because after that, if we do end up activating the economic levers and hopefully get those 600 million euros that apparently we're going to need to go back to the one-to-one rule, however you say it, then all focus is going to be on Robert Lewandowski and Jules Koundé, not on Ousmane Dembélé. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great point, because I wasn't even thinking about Dembélé. Honestly, like, it's like, oh, it's gotten cold and whatnot. But thinking about that rule and that it would count as a renewal, I think now, because of that, these last 9 days, we could see something that could go from being really cold to all of a sudden, oh my God, Dembélé, Sissoko's back with Matteo Aleman, like, because of that specifically. Yeah. So,
in the same regard, like, Gavi is not yet official. It is not yet official. It will be in the next few days. But again, that one also has 9 days to be signed. So I think at some point we have to say, okay, at least, like, right? Like, we felt like Gavi and Araujo was going to happen the whole time, but also, like, there's a chance where it doesn't. And so when Gavi finally does sign, also, you know, a little clap for the club and they'll clap for Alemani. Okay, thank goodness that one's done as well, because that's hugely important to get done. So, all right, speaking of getting done, Rafa, we are done with another show. Somehow we almost got an hour of yada, yada, yada talking out.
That's
of
what we do.
A little bit of Frankie the Young and transfer rumors. So yeah, right. None of these deals might happen, right? Like, Frankie the Young might be the only player at Barcelona next season of all the players we just named. who knows? So Rafa, again, people can follow you down in the show notes below, always doing his thing down in Puerto Rico. So thanks so much for coming on the show, Rafa. And thanks again for you, the listeners, for tuning in to our show. Again, if you're here with us still, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, YouTube, the merch store. I got to keep shouting again, not a very good entrepreneur. I gave that away already. So I got to do a plug on social media, work for me to do on the back end. But yeah, we have our merch store. And again, the YouTube is where I came up with that La Masia video from earlier in the week. So it's like 15 minutes long. So it's a whole little thing you can do when you're, don't walk your dog with doing it, but just give it a watch. But anyway, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.